the problem historically was we had this throw it over the fence mentality, where exactly what you just said, marketing was like, hey, here's your MQLs, let me throw it over to sales. Sales, you go close that. Where now, what were the conversion rates of those? Okay, why did those convert? Why did those not convert? What channels are they actually coming through, right? How can we then making sure that depending on what channel they come through and what content they consume, do they actually go into the right conversation with the sales team?
Hey there, I'm joined with Keith Barnett, who's the VP of Revenue at MixMax. Really happy to have you here, Keith, and excited to get into some of your background and you know, some of the maverickiness of what you do. This is the Go to Market Mavericks podcast. So thanks for joining.
Awesome, man. I'm excited to be here. As a kid, you grew up, you want to be a doctor or you want to be a lawyer. So I actually did want to be a doctor. So I played sports throughout college, tore my ACL twice. And that motivated me as I wanted to get into sports medicine. I was great at science and math, as I've always been like what I'm great at, but I was just bored at science. And so in college, switched up to a finance degree, and I've always been good at sales, but I think there's always been that cliche around sales. Like typical people, like you think of sales, you think of like a car salesman, right? And like, I don't want to be a car salesman, but like, man, like it's always been in my roots. You know, my mom's an entrepreneur. She owned a couple of restaurants growing up. My first sales job was probably when I was like 7 years old, selling newspaper subscriptions door to door. I've done the thick of it where I did door to door B2B sales, which was literally me walking door to door to offices. And the company was called Quill, and it was the wholesale supplier of staples. So I literally was going door to door to businesses to try to sell computers, printers, paper, whatever it might be.
It's like Xerox type stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So like it was a hustle, but learned a lot from it. After I graduated college, I actually started off in the finance route. So I was a financial derivatives trader. I worked for an oil and gas company, and basically my job was to hedge all their risk against their physical flow of oil and gas. And what you see in the movies is real, man. The Boiler Room, Wolf of Wall Street, like all of that stuff really happens. And I looked up one day and it was like either everybody was like divorced, stressed out, like depressed. And I just looked up, I was like, is this how I really want to make money? And it wasn't. And so that was when I went into the consulting route. And so I joined Accenture. Started doing mega enterprise deals. So my team did specifically any deals in the tech industry that were $250 million or larger. So like mega enterprise. And that was kind of where, like I say, like I got bit by the tech bug. I was working with amazing companies like Meta, Facebook at the time, Microsoft, Samsung, etc. And rather than joining a tech company, I had an idea and I was like, I'll just start my own tech company. So started my first tech company in 2016, had 99 problems, but stress was not one. I'm sure every founder can relate to that one. And after that, like I did scaled that up for a couple of years, really lost the passion, which is one of my biggest lessons, like takeaways from starting a company is like when it becomes a job, like that's a clear signal that it's time to change things up. And at that time I was getting recruited by Uber. So I actually worked for Uber, joined their Uber Eats team, launched the actual sales office here in Texas, in Dallas. So we had to basically launch and scale 150 person sales force within about 6 months.
Wow.
And then immediately after that, COVID hit. So it was like figuring out how do we hire this many people? How do we ramp this many people up? And then it was like, boom, COVID hit. So it was like, well, now how do we take 150 people and actually create this remote environment to where like you know, everybody can still be productive.
Can I ask you a little bit more about that actually?
Yeah.
Just on the scale side of things, because like I almost feel like it's you know when you think about a VP of sales or someone to like lead a team like that, it's like okay, train up the team, do demos, like be hands on, and this is almost like seems like an HR role. It's like just figure out a hiring path and like scale the team and like make sure you're bringing on the right kind of people and like train them up. So like tell us a little bit more about like the scale and like the maybe like the rigor involved there, because it just sounds like you have to be pretty organized to hire that amount of people.
Yeah, I think like, well, One thing that we were lucky about is that was still during the grow at all costs mentality phase. So thankfully, we had a very robust recruiting team that helped us actually like get that. And Uber had a big name. So, I mean, we were getting thousands and thousands of applications. So, like, finding the talent was not the problem. Mm-hmm. The problem was exactly what you were talking about. I was like, how do we actually bring in these cohorts of people, enable them properly? And so really building out our onboarding and certification program was critical.
Yeah.
And so we had it down to a clockwork. One, what helped us was we were very strategic in how we onboarded, meaning we had two dates. You were either in a part of like the first of the month cohort or you were part of the 15th mm-hmm. of the month cohort. There was none of this, like this person starts the 8th, this person starts on the 10th. So that was one big thing because it allowed us to actually know what size the incoming class was and then actually build out everything from there.
Mm-hmm.
But still with onboarding, right? That's like phase one. I think that was probably where I sharpened up my tools from a coaching and enablement perspective, because it was not just the reps, but we also had to hire sales managers and make sure that they were ramped up appropriately. And so it did come down to like you had to figure out what was the science behind it and was it actually scalable? Mm-hmm. And we made a lot of mistakes, right? I mean,
yeah.
When you hire at that fast of a rate, like unfortunately not everybody's going to make it. And I think what we did a good job at was our certification program,
right?
Was like you had to pass a discovery certification, a demo certification, an onboarding certification, like everything that we knew was going to be very critical for that customer lifecycle.
Yeah.
And the second piece that I think also made it fun was we gamified a lot of it. So we made sure that we put a lot of like challenges and competitions because we wanted to also create this camaraderie between these cohorts, because you had, you know, 20, 30 people being onboarded at once.
Mm-hmm. And like, if someone didn't pass certification or something like that, did they just like go back into like the next cohort or something?
No, not back to the cohort, but like they actually had a time, like they had to go back to step one and mm-hmm. they had a time frame of like how they could actually work on those things. And that was where we got a little bit more on like the micro coaching. So like rather than actually doing cohorts is like those individual reps, we actually carved out individual one-on-one time to really help them close on those gaps. And, you know, sometimes there was that unfortunate part where it's like, you know what, this is just not the right fit. Like that's just going to happen when you're hiring at that scale.
And I think, yeah, for other people in your position too, like in terms of like timeline of knowing when someone was going to be a fit or not, like even after certification, like, is there like a proxy there was like, if someone's like not at this level or like off the ground in like 3 months or whatever timeline was like, you know, then, you know, we have to part ways. Is there like a sink or swim mentality? Can you tell us a little bit more about that too?
Yeah. So I actually take this in every organization. It's the taboo word of performance improvement plans. nobody likes to talk about it, but the reality of it is that I think it actually creates clarity around what is expected and what happens if those expectations are not met. It's one of the reasons I love sales. Like there's no gray area, right? Mm-hmm. Unless like you're a startup and like you're in that phase of like 0 to 1, even 1 to 10,
product market fit,
like there's a little bit more of that gray area. But like when you're at that scale of 10 to 100, I like to just lay it out clearly. And so my process is like, if you miss quota the first time, we put you on a coaching plan. And that is more of like, let's address the elephant in a room, what prevented you from actually hitting success. And like, let's actually coach you towards hitting that success and achieving it. If you miss quota again that following month, then yeah, we need to talk about a performance improvement plan. And if you miss quota 3 times, in three consecutive months, like that's a 3 strikes you're out, unfortunately. What I have always tried to do, though, is rather than just saying, hey, this is not the right fit, like good luck. My goal, number one, is always, did we do the right job of putting you in the right position? Yes or no. If we didn't, is there an opportunity within the company that we think you might be a better fit for? Oh. If there is, then like, let's find that opportunity for you. Let's give you that shot. And if that opportunity is not there, then unfortunately, that's the decision where it's like we have to part ways.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is, I guess what the nice thing about sales is very objective. It's like, either did or you didn't, I guess, in terms of quota. Yeah.
And the thing is like so many sales or revenue leaders, like we don't want to put pips in place. I think reps actually respect it. because reps want to know exactly what happens if I succeed and what happens if I don't succeed. And I think it's when we're too afraid to like have that conversation of a pip. I think that's actually on us, is like we think that it's going to create this anxiety in an environment. It's going to create this cutthroat environment. What I've realized is all it does is just lays out expectations. So that way, like, I'm a big believer that if you ever have to have that unfortunate conversation, nobody should be surprised that conversation is happening.
Right, right.
If they are surprised, that's on you as a leader for not setting expectations properly, not communicating properly. And so that is like my biggest emphasis of like any time with like not just onboarding, but continuous development, is making sure that everybody understands exactly like if we take a right turn, this is what happens. If we take a left turn, this is what happens.
Well, I sorry, I interrupted your origin story. So from Uber, how did you get to MixMax?
Yeah, so from Uber, since then I've been, you know, I took a lot of the lessons I learned from starting my own company and then from scaling Uber, and I've been across startups and scale ups since then. So after Uber, I was with an organization called Notch, which was a SaaS platform with a embedded finance layer. Then I got the opportunity to work with another unicorn, Airwallex. Airwallex is like the unicorn that most people in the States have never heard of. But we were, when I joined, I was hired to launch the North America market for them, doing about $400 million in ARR at about a $6 billion valuation. So shout out to Jack, the CEO. Like, he built an amazing organization, and it was an absolute blast scaling that one. That one had a different layer of lessons learned. Because usually most of us are very adapt to taking a US-based company and how do we scale it globally? Well, this was, how do we take this global first company and actually scale it in the United States? And Airwallex is specifically focused on cross-border payments. And so it's a very, very different pain point. So you had the North American market was like a startup within this very successful, very mature unicorn, because we had to go all the way back to the basics of like, well, what's product market fit look like here? Because management of FX and cross-border payments are very different. And then with MixMax, like, I've always had a passion on the sales engagement side, right? Like, I myself am always trying to figure out, how can I be more productive? How can I make my reps more productive? And so, you know, I met Olaf, our CEO and co-founder, and we chatted for a few months, and I think that we are making some moves that are the right strategic moves with the transitions and the shifts that are happening in the market today.
I did want to ask about, okay, so like going through your journey there, it just seems like you're motivated by challenges, but I'm curious if you like introspected on that at all.
No, it is, because my wife actually asks me this all the time, because it's like, I love problems, right? Like, plain and simple, I am motivated by problems. Like, I love coming into a challenge where it's like, hey, we're trying to do this, but we don't know how to actually figure that out. That's where I'm like, cool, like, let's get to the lab and let's like start figuring out, let's test things. And then once we figure it out, like, I always have, and I learned this from Uber, was make a hypothesis, test it, break it. If you can't break it, then you figure out how to scale it, right? And my wife always asks me this, because it's like every organization I've been to, like, I come in and I help build this organization to set up for scalability and success. And then I usually go on to my next opportunity. And she always asks, she's like, Keith, like, right as you figure things out, she's like, you get on easy street, and then you decide, like, let's go to that next challenge. And that's where I've come to the conclusion, like, yep, I'm motivated by problems. I just love solving problems.
I love that growth challenge phase, where it's like, it's very like scientific, like first principles thinking. And then like, once you're scaling and like repetitive, I'm like, oh, this is boring. Like, I don't want to do anymore.
Yeah. Once the playbook is built, it's a playbook. It's a motion. Like, you know, it works. Like, I love building out the playbooks. I love building out the actual GTM motions. And I think like, the next generation, I think, of revenue and sales leaders and go-to-market leaders actually crave that, because I think the next generation is less commercial sales focus and more of like this operator mentality, because you have to figure out, how do I do less with more now? And it's about, you know, leveraging technology to do the right things, making sure you have the right people. And yeah, man, I get excited. I literally wake up every single morning excited to like, what problem am I walking into today?
Jumping ahead to like what you've seen, you know, it sounds like, you know, there's this operator new, new like innovation thing happening in your mind. Like, what have you seen change from like over the course of even just like the last 5 years? Or, like, what's different now from from when you're getting started and like what's exciting to you?
Man, there's a lot.
That's too big of a question.
There's a lot. I think like one, let's address the elephant in the room. Like the golden years of SaaS are over. I think that sales is not going to be as easy as sales used to be, right? Like I actually call this out a lot where I'm like, a lot of these playbooks that we sell, like people are selling on LinkedIn. I'm like, great. That playbook was created when sales was actually easy. We were order takers. Like, let's just call it what it is. Everybody had budget. Everybody was just like bloating the tech stack, and those days are over. So I think like some of the biggest differences, like one, technology is not new, right? I think that's actually critical because 5 to 10 years ago, when we talk about go to market, you could do like hacky things that you could get by with and make, oh, we'll build that later. Like we're just going to kind of smooth it over with this. But now most technology is like there's table stakes. Like you need to have good reporting. I expect you to have these integrations already done, right? Like that is, I think, a very key difference in the market today. And it's changed the landscape of how like startups are building. But with that being said, the way we build has also, you know, increased 10x with the use of AI. And like there's so many tools now to where you can build a lot faster. I think revenue teams are now a blend of operators and sellers. And what I mean by that is like the departmental approach of like marketing does this, sales does this, customer success does this. Like those days are over. It's all about like, how do we create this one fluid go-to-market motion that has everything connected of like, how does marketing feed into sales? How does sales feed back into marketing with that feedback loop? How does sales then feed into product? How does that then feed into customer success? It's like building a big jigsaw puzzle. And that kind of goes back to my motivation because I'm like, cool, like let's figure out how to build the engine. And then we know when we tighten this bolt, loosen this one, let's add some lubrication here, add some oil here. And like this thing is a well-oiled machine. Mm-hmm. I think the last one, this is thanks to Elon Musk. Like everybody gave the guy so much crap for what he did over at Twitter or X or whatever we call it these days. But it's all about efficient growth and sustainability now, right? I think that the days of grow at all costs, which Uber, unfortunately was like the one to create that path. But VCs are not cutting the same checks that they used to cut. They're expecting you to actually be more efficient with the money that you do have and the burn rate you have. And so I think what Elon did is he came to Twitter and was like, there's so much middle layer management that this is not necessary. And I think he cut the fat. And everybody gave him a lot of crap for it. But then the board looked back at it and was like, well, wait, we're actually profitable now. And I think that started that downward pressure on every other company of like, okay, how can you actually be more sustainable with your growth? And that feeds into the last one, which is, I think now the mentality is about how do we unlock value and not just acquire value. I think that historically for the past 5 or 10 years, we focused so much on acquisition cost and marketing spend and sales spend, right? What's your CAC to LTV? That's always been the biggest one. And most of the focus was always on the CAC side, right? Are we actually acquiring efficiently? Where now I think the transition is like, it's more on the LTV side of like, how are we actually acquiring efficiently? But then how are we actually unlocking more of that value and increasing that LTV? And that's a shift in the mindset because you start to look at the entire revenue bow tie and not just one side of the funnel.
Yeah. And how are you seeing that like in the field or like objection handling wise? Or I'm guessing like there's, you know, people who you're trying to sell to are like, oh, we're trying to consolidate. Actually, we don't need this tech. Or, you know, how does this make us more efficient? Like, are you seeing any trends in the field that you can kind of share and how you like handle that?
Yeah, I think like it's, I think around that objection, I think it's number one, it goes back to the cold outbound. I think that's it's a different subject, but it's more about meeting buyers where our buyers are at rather than where we want them to be. Right. And I think that's the acquisition mentality was like, I'm going to convince you that you need my tech. I'm going to convince you that you need this solution. And during that time, guess what? They had budget. So they're like, cool, like I'll add it. Let's see if it actually works. We're now like, we don't have that convenience. And so I think if you're getting those objections, you're probably fishing the wrong pond. Right. And I think that's where like for us, like we leverage the value of signal stacking. Right. Like, you know, Common Room is a perfect example to where I believe 5 years ago, we tried to convince somebody why we should have a conversation, where I think today, if you're doing go-to-market effectively, is you are engaging buyers when they are ready to be engaged and you have the right to have a conversation because they are showing you that they want to have a conversation. And that's kind of our whole goal at MixMax is like, how do we help sales and revenue teams actually know who to contact, when to contact them, what channel to contact them through, and then how to actually engage them in a meaningful way that actually makes sure that we have conversations that customers care about.
I used to call it the holy grail of marketing, but it's almost like the holy grail of go-to-market, which is just like right person, right context, right time, right message, right all the things. I think now, I don't know, maybe if you can share now, if like, you know, how that is seeming like it's actually, that promise is actually being delivered on. And it's just like a cheat code for, you know, conversion. It's like, if you can do all those things right, then like, you know, like the conversation is super easy. It's where it's like, yeah, you like read my mind. This is exactly what I want. Like, let's have a conversation.
So I think you make a great point there, right? And this kind of goes back to that matrix organization versus that departmental mindset. Is it used to be that marketing was just focused on the customer journey, right? We all know like the different stages of buyer awareness. And what happened historically was marketing hit the nail on the head there. And then when it got to sales, it just went through another generic sequence where sales was just like, oh, cool. Like, okay, you want us? Like, let's have a conversation. And sales made a lot of assumptions rather than taking that gold that marketing was able to uncover and actually using that gold to actually have a meaningful conversation, a more personalized conversation. I think now that's what you're seeing is like, it's how do we take what marketing has recognized and how do we make sure that we're layering in that in the sales conversation? And then how do we make sure we're layering that in on the implementation? And then how are we layering that in on customer success? Oh, by the way, let's also start looking at product signals to where when we actually talk about expansion, we're talking about the right type of expansion, not just expansion in general. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're going from this kind of like one size fits all mentality to how do we be more adaptable and making sure that the conversations we have are the conversations that our customers care about, plain and simple.
And you said like, you know, marketing was like, you know, maybe it was in the ZERP area where marketing was like, here's the journey, hand it over to sales. Like, don't think about it. Like, here's all these MQLs. I'm hitting my number. Sales isn't hitting their number. Like, how do you get those two teams aligned? I don't know if you have a point of view there, but it's always like a hot topic.
Man, to get them aligned, I think like, number one, I think the first is the loop, right? I think the problem, and this goes with marketing and product. I think the problem historically was we have this throw it over the fence mentality where exactly what you just said, marketing was like, hey, here's your MQLs. Let me throw it over to sales. Sales, you go close that. Where now it is, I mean, I have these conversations on a daily basis with my marketing team where it's like, cool, like here's our MQLs. What were the conversion rates of those? Okay, why did those convert? Why did those not convert? What channels are they actually coming through, right? How can we then making sure that depending on what channel they come through and what content they consume, do they actually go into the right conversation with the sales team, right? And so I think it's about having that feedback loop to where everybody's on the same page at all times. And the same thing goes back to product, right? I think that to your point around what has changed, what I think has not changed is that the end goal is the same. How do we actually provide a delightful customer experience? How do we actually show recurring impact for that customer? And then how do we unlock value? And I think the biggest difference between how we do that now is that it takes everyone being on the same page where it's a one team, one dream mentality versus marketing, my job is MQLs, sales, your job is bookings, implementation, your job is onboarding. Like everything feeds into one another now.
Yeah. Is there like a magic metric or anything like that to hold everyone accountable? Or is it, you know, because all those things are different metrics. And so, I guess you have to look at the whole funnel, but I'm curious if any takes there.
Yeah, I think like there's really not a magic metric, right? I think like the magic metric from like, you know, the rule of 40 is one when you actually just look at from an organizational perspective. But I think from a go-to-market perspective is I look at the overall revenue bow tie because, and I think that's where when you can standardize what metrics represent what piece of that customer journey it's not that there's this silver bullet, and I think that's a separate conversation, is a lot of us still have this silver bullet mentality where it's like, we do that one thing, it's going to solve all problems. Mm-hmm. Where I operate out of is from a GTM motion is I look at, okay, what's the one metric that we're going to align on as the North Star metric at top of funnel? Okay, then what's the one metric we're going to align on middle of the funnel? What's the one metric we care about for onboarding? What's the one, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Because then when you actually can look at that full revenue bow tie, it's very obvious where you can notice where the gaps are. And it's like, hey, we're inefficient right here. Marketing and sales, like that's a handoff transition between you two. Like what's causing that gap, mm-hmm. right? And then we can actually dig deeper into the data and understand.
And it sounds like you, for each of those different parts of the funnel, you would have other stakeholders who like maybe feel the other part of the funnel kind of like weigh in. Okay, so going back to MixMax, I like how we're going all over the place here. So you're relatively new. I feel like when you're hired for a reason, you are maybe like a change agent or brought in to do something. So I think you're maybe at like 90 days, maybe a little bit more. So can you tell us like what you were hired for? You know, what's your charter? How are things going? I would love to like get a sense of, you know, how things are going at MixMax.
Yeah, I think like one of the main reasons I was brought into MixMax was to really help build out a product-led sales motion, right? I think that when you look at MixMax historically, we were amazing. We had an amazing PLG motion. And I think we made the mistake that way too many companies make is we want to start going up market. And so it's like, how do we then blend in that sales-led motion? And what happens 9 times out of 10 is that sales-led then actually cannibalizes your product-led motion. And so I think that we did a good job of recognizing that, like, hey, this is starting to happen. Let's make sure we kind of course correct. And how do we actually make this strong PLG and PLS motion? So that's what I was brought here for. Where I'm excited about MixMax is I think that most of your sales engagement tools, I mean, I'm just going to call it out. Like, I'm sure I'll get shit for this, but whatever. not from MixMax, but from our competitors. I think that a lot, I'm not going to name names, but I think that a lot of historical sales engagement tools were built off the foundation of a spray and pray mass outreach mentality. And I think that a lot of them are scrambling right now to figure out, okay, how do we still actually capitalize? And so I think that you're focusing on one of two areas. It's either how do we make prospecting better, or we're going to jump into the revenue intelligence, right? I think Gong is actually doing an amazing job on that revenue intelligence side. And I think there's a lot of people that are following that. Mm-hmm. Where MixMax is really setting our footprint is we believe there's still a big gap. Like when you set a meeting with a prospect, great. There's a lot that goes into that to actually create an opportunity and start managing that deal to actually close it. Mm-hmm. And for us, like we think that there's a lot of point solutions that are solving bits and pieces, where for us is like, we want to make sure that we're capitalizing on that, where it's like, great, you found the right person to contact. Now here's who we think you should also talk to, right? When you think about the average buying committee is like 6 people now, even in the SMB side. If you're talking to one person, you're gonna have a real, real hard time there. Then you had a meeting booked, great. Like how do we actually make sure we're setting you up for success? Like giving you the right details of that meeting. How do we actually help automate a lot of the things that either reps are not good at or reps don't wanna do? And so if we kind of like boil it down to a couple of themes is like our whole thing is, how do we leverage, and this is through great partnerships and integrations, wink, wink, hint, hint, common room. How do you leverage intelligent signals to making sure that you're actually going after the right people? Then actually, how do you have intelligent conversations and connections? How do you actually manage intelligent meetings? And then the last piece is like, how do you actually have intelligent engagement after that?
If I can repeat some of that thesis back to you, it's actually kind of something that I've on the marketing end I've experienced, where it's like the analogy in marketing is like, okay, you're doing all this awareness stuff to, and a lot of people focus so much on acquisition, where it's like you're doing all this awareness stuff to get your brand out there, to get traffic to your website, to getting someone to actually fill out a form. And like the tendency is to typically like, let's continue to like fill that top of funnel and like spend more money down the top of funnel. Whereas like, if you were to improve the conversion rate at the bottom of funnel from, you know, 50%, 100%, like your job's done. It's like you already have the leads, you already have all of the acquisition that you need. So maybe like mm-hmm. it's a better point of efficiency. You don't focus on like that bottom part of the funnel that just oftentimes just goes forgotten about. And it sounds like that's somewhat of the thesis with MixMax, where it's like, yeah, like all these sales engagement platforms are focused on like, you know, getting the meeting booked, but like what happens after that? And so you're kind of looking at it more holistically in how we can improve conversion, like all the way across the funnel. Is that accurate?
It's spot on, right? So let's take this full circle back to like, we're talking about what are the metrics to tie the go-to-market teams. I think that one of the challenges that we do as revenue or go-to-market leaders is we're like, oh, we need to increase win rates so we can close more deals. Or it's just, we need to close more deals so we can make more money. Same thing happens on the marketing side. The first thing, it's always like, well, how do we get more signups or how do we get more MQLs? Where if you look at the compounding impact across that revenue bow tie, mm-hmm. it's much, much more controllable, solvable if I say, hey, our show rate today at meetings is 70%. If we can get that show rate from 70 to 75, that's actually going to have a 20% impact on our win rate, right? Mm-hmm. Like if those are the controllable ones that if you can actually really drive efficiency and effectiveness, that's going to have monumental impact on the end goal, which is the closed ones, the bookings, the revenue, the retention, et cetera. And I know we're talking a lot about top of funnel, but this is also a problem across the entire revenue bow tie of like how CSMs operate, how account managers operate. Like we make this assumption that once a customer is a customer, that they're always going to want to talk to us. They're always going to be available for our CSM teams. Like every single CSM listening to this, they're going to be like, BS. Like I know that I'm still prospecting, because you got to make sure that if your decision maker is still there, if not, who's the champion behind that? Like there is still a prospecting game even after you acquire a customer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then to kind of highlight this point to, because I'm thinking about it like, okay, the executives or the board is like, we need top of funnel, we need awareness, like we want to get our brand out there. How do you make that? Like, how do you show that? Do you just do like scenario planning where it's like, hey, like let's like change the spreadsheet number from like 5% to 10%, and then like look at how that impacts revenue. Like, how do you surface that so you can get buy-in, so that people aren't like, oh, let's focus on this thing that's like really, you know, top of mind and like visual, but like actually it's like behind the scenes stuff that matters.
Yeah. So I actually just got done doing this here at MixMax. And so basically what I'll do is, you know, there's always going to be the top-down influence of like, how do we get to, you know, ARR X, right? If that's mm-hmm. the ultimate goal. So then I'll back kind of like backtrack. I'm like, okay, if we want to get to that revenue, we got to close this many deals, et cetera, et cetera. Where I think like a lot of us fall short is we stop there, right? We want to hit 11 million, 12 million, 15 million ARR. Cool. We got to close this many deals. We got to bring in this many MQLs. What I do is I then go into capacity planning mode where I'm like, okay, let's do a bottoms up model to actually compare this, because if our rep capacity is here and we expect them to increase that capacity by 50% to hit that number, like we're just lying to ourselves, because that's not going to happen. We either need to hire more people, which again goes back to that sustainability, like everybody's getting pushback on the not hiring more people. And what I focus on number two is just like, okay, well, if we actually increase our MQL to sales qualified lead conversion by 5% quarter over quarter, it's actually going to have this impact on our wins, which is going to have this impact on our revenue. That's how I break it down to create a very clear visual. And then I'll actually create this summary and I'll show it line by line in a month over month growth. And what you'll see is like these small conversions at the MQL to SQL or show rate conversions. And then you get down the win rate and you're like, wait, how did our win rate increase 15, 20%? And it's like, well, for every meeting, I just added one more meeting because our show rate went up by 5%. Mm-hmm. I just actually increased, you know, the funnel by this because we just improved this one conversion metric. And the beauty is like, it's all controllable. Right? Like it's very easy for me to like work with my team to be like, hey team, here's our show rate. How do we get this, you know, from 70 to 75%? What can we focus on? Versus if I came to you and I'm like, hey man, like Kevin, our win rate's at 20% and we got to get it to 25. We're both going to look at each other with this blank stare of like, well, how do we do that?
Yeah, of course. Of course. Of course we want to get it to 25, right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You just, you know, brought up such a critical thing where on capacity, we just went through this, you know, growing pain ourselves at Common Room, where, you know, capacity was, our pipeline was down in July, and we're like, oh, it's seasonality. But like, we also like had like not enough reps. And I was like, I know it's a capacity thing. Like, we got to hire more reps. And like, we brought on a team and scaled reps. And then all of a sudden, like, shot up like the next month after adding 9 reps is like, you know, 3x pipeline. And I'm just like, oh, thank God that was what it is, because that would be really bad if it was not. That wasn't the problem. But, you know, capacity is such a big thing where it's like, okay, these reps are just trying to juggle all that they can, and like, they can't have, mm-hmm. they can't pull in new opportunities for pipeline. So anyway.
Well, and that creates a good problem of hiring, which I think is the ultimate goal of where we want to be at, right? I think 5 years ago, we didn't go into that much depth because we had the budget, we had the cash flow, right? It was like, I could go to my CEO and be like, hey, I need some more people. And I really didn't have to build a strong business case. Where now, to your point, it's like, hey, like, our reps are like, they are at capacity. They're actually operating over capacity. This is not going to last long. Like, we need to make sure we bring in that relief to ensure that our consistency stays the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Scarcity causes efficiency in a lot of ways. You're just going to like ride the right balance up and as you scale growth. Okay. We're getting close to running out of time. So, there's a few fun questions I wanted to ask you. One is, on your LinkedIn, it says you're the Jimmy Neutron of go-to-market. And so I just wanted to ask what that was all about.
Man, my wife makes fun of me all the time. So Jimmy Neutron, well, I absolutely loved that as a kid growing up. And, you know, kind of when we go back to like my passion, like, I love problems. I love getting creative to solve those problems, because every environment you're in is very unique. And so if you actually look at Jimmy Neutron and like what it's based off, it's like this kid who had a very inventive mind, and he had an ability to come up with creative solutions to like complex problems, like similar to go-to-market. So I think like there's a couple of things that Jimmy Neutron represents that I like to think that I represent. Very forward thinking, very creative. Obviously in the show, he was very technically proficient, very adaptable. And so I think all of those are actually like qualities that are necessary for today's GTM leader. And it also stands out. Like, I actually, the best prospecting I've had done on me yet was somebody sent me a picture of Jimmy Neutron with like my face over it. And it worked. I was like, man, like, I'm going to give you the time just because you gave me a good laugh. But I think it also helps stand out a little bit.
I mean, it sounds like the perfect like persona for us. I'm going to like steal that and make it like, you know, how people do like Mark or Mary or whatever. Like, Jimmy Neutron is like our ideal, like, you're our ideal customer persona, I guess. I love that. And then the last thing is maybe like a plug for you, but also, also something I'm curious about the strategy here is, you know, I saw you recently launched the MixMax, recently launched the Mixology podcast. I wonder if, what the thought was behind that, kind of like what your objectives. I think a lot of people also are kind of like, oh, should we do a podcast? Should we like, you know, invest heavily in LinkedIn? Should we like do SEO? Like, you know, what is the thought process behind that and like and strategy?
Yeah. So I think like, number one, I think social selling is not going away, right? I think that when we talk about the next generation of like revenue teams and revenue leaders, I think that you have to be able to have a brand, right? And that's not just personal, but that's also for companies. Like, you have to have a brand outside of just the product that you provide. Number two, selfishly, like, I love picking other go-to-market leaders' brains. I love learning. Like, that's just who I am. From the technical side around like go-to-market is, obviously, we're budget conscious, right? And so when we look at the industry that we're in, we're going to waste a lot of money trying to actually go and compete on display ads, right? Even on the SEO side, like, you're going to spend a lot of money actually going after the words that you want to go and target. And so for us, it's, well, why don't we just create a badass multi-channel kind of content strategy? And so what we do is, like, with every show, we then create, you know, 5 or 6 clips from that show. We put it on YouTube. We also then created a podcast, put it on the podcast. And so just from one episode, we now have 5 different channels of content. You got LinkedIn content. You have it from what you're sharing, from what the person you interviewed are sharing. You have YouTube. You have Spotify. And with the right partner, for us, it's Common Room, right? Like, that's where we can then also start to track, like, okay, what's that user journey like? because I can then also be more efficient with my marketing. I would much rather spend my marketing budget on retargeting than actually trying to go from a demand gen acquisition focus. And so that's kind of like the ins and outs of the technical side behind like why we wanted to get Mixology going. But yeah, then there's also the selfish side. Like, I just love talking to people and learning, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just like, that's our playbook also for this. It's like, we're going to take this episode, we're going to chop it up, we're going to distribute it and ride off the coattails of your knowledge, Heath. So.
Well, and I think like too, like the last thing I'll include is I think like, man, the best type of partnership is ones where you're getting value, not just outside of the product and solution, but also outside of just like the company and the community that they build. And that was one of the things, especially from a product-led perspective, like if we want to be a very PLG company, community is everything, right? And so what are we actually doing to give back to our users? Because when you think about our core ICP, like we are very SMB focused. Our whole mentality is build your business on MixMax. And so we know that the type of customers we deal with are growing or they're trying to grow. And so what a better way than to actually be able to be a knowledge foundation for them to actually not just use your software, but also be able to learn from and grow with.
Yeah. 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 I mean, education is like such a big part of sales, I feel like right now. I don't know if you have any takes there. It sounds like you're just like, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, let's wrap up. I think, you know, is there anything else that you know, we didn't get into that you wanted to share or like, you know, want to, you know, how can people follow you, follow MixMax?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can find me on LinkedIn, Heath Barnett. You can find MixMax on LinkedIn. Pay attention. What I will say to everybody is next generation MixMax is coming out soon. We're already starting to put some teasers out there in the market, but it's all about how can we help people have, how can we humanize the sales process by using intelligent solutions, AKA AI? AI not to replace, but AI to actually help optimize the way that you sell, the way that you have actual customer engagements. So yeah, man, stay tuned. There's a lot of exciting stuff in the roadmap.
Awesome. Yeah, I can't believe it's now, you know, just now in the episode where we're talking about AI, but yeah, awesome. We'll close it out with that. Heath, thanks so much for joining and yeah, have a good one, everyone.
Awesome. I appreciate the time, Kevin.